Welcome to The Debrief, presented by Ontic Center for Connected Intelligence, where we engage in conversations about topics we've explored and have been observing at the center.
Our goal is to foster a deeper understanding of the dynamic operating landscape and bridge the gap between complex topics and practical insights.
Join us as we navigate complexities, distill information, and derive insights through engaging conversations and thoughtful analysis, addressing the industry's evolving challenges.
Well, here we are, the second edition of the Debrief podcast with all of us. This is great. We survived the first episode, and I know we've all received some great kudos from the field about people liking the three of us kind of on talking about what we're hearing and what we're seeing. What say either of you?
I'm just delighted to be back. It's always good when you're renewed for a second episode, so this is promising.
Yeah, my agent will be in touch,
Chuck. Oh no. Or are we AI right now? I mean, that could be. I just read where ChatGPT was kind of downplaying the fact that they could mimic people's voices. So perhaps it's real, perhaps it's Memorex.
We're going to be targeted now.
Regardless, it's good to be back. And for once, I think we're all kind of in the office, if you will, whether that's the DC offices or the Texas offices. So nice to see everyone or hear everyone in their office and not traveling. Let's get right to it because we've got quite a few things we want to talk about. I mean, obviously, we're just on the end of wrapping up Women's History Month. It was, you know, it's great. We all kind of have our favorite stories that we like to go back to and tell. But, you know, in particular, we have Women Who Protect the podcast, Marisa, that you kind of host. And I think we're proud to say that every guest this last month was female, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It was in honor of Women's History Month for March of 2024. But we had a couple of episodes of Women Who Protect, our special series within our Protective Intelligence podcast, but then also our regular podcast guests. So all four were women. We had Dr. Charity Dean, about biosecurity in the age of biotech. We had Anna Leppingwell with Xlog about her career journey getting into security and mastering global operations and security operations. Cheryl Dick, who stood up the first GSOC at Chick-fil-A, and she's got a phenomenal career trajectory. She started as a cashier working in a Chick-fil-A store. She was a store associate in her teen years, became a franchise owner, multiple franchise owner, and then rose up to direct their security department and opened their very first GSOC. And then just posting right now is our latest episode with Wendy Bashnan, who's now with Scout Motors, director of security and fire safety there. One thing I just want to highlight for these episodes, for the episodes that we have in Women Who Protect, and again, in honor of Women's History Month, is that we have this fascinating theme coming out of these episodes, particularly for the Women Who Protect episodes. We're asking these incredibly accomplished women, these security practitioners, these leaders in the field in all different aspects of security and protection, how they got their start in security and protection. So many of them got into the field almost by accident, unintentionally, through circuitous routes. And often sort of the key deciding factor for them was someone already in security encouraging them to give it a try. So these episodes are great stories and these incredibly amazing women doing phenomenal things in the field of security. So I encourage you to listen to them if you haven't had a chance to do so.
Well, I think it's important just to note like the barrier that exists. You know, often there's this, like, if you're not a former something, insert here, military, law enforcement, government, something, then there's been a barrier to entry, whether that's been true or an unconscious barrier or just one that's been built through security culture. I think we've done it, and there's miles to go before we sleep, if you'll allow me that. But I think we've done a good job thus far of trying to diminish those barriers. We just had Dan Heath at the Ontic Summit, I don't know, feels like 10 years ago, but was just a couple months ago. And he talked about the idea of upstream, you know, and I love the idea of challenging people to get upstream and say, hey, look, if you're worried about finding practitioners now, get upstream and help seed the river, help seed the mouth of the issue by challenging and breaking down barriers.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think for all of our listeners, for anyone listening, just go ahead and encourage a woman you know to consider a career in security. Encourage anyone you know to consider a career in security. I think there are still some misperceptions about physical requirements, or that you have to have known from a young age that this is your passion, and that's just not true. Some of our most talented, most accomplished practitioners and colleagues that we have out there today got in from completely different fields and sort of fell into security by accident.
Yeah, something else I've noticed about the particularly the individuals that you highlighted here, you know, every one of them has a passion for being inquisitive. And I think if people say like, oh, you know, what's your passion for security? Maybe it's protecting people. Maybe it's problem solving. Maybe it's helping people. But I think there's something to helping individuals say like, what is the thing that's driving you? You know, it doesn't have to be security. I mean, Wendy, in particular, is, I think, Fred, you interviewed Wendy a couple of years ago back when she was still with the State Department, didn't you?
I did. Actually worked for me in a TDY capacity as a young special agent when we started our first.
That's what the problem is.
Yeah. So she came over and was part of our initial counter-surveillance teams when we first rolled that program out, and then rose to an extraordinarily high rank inside the State Department and was actually running our entire training division in our post-Benghazi world, where agents learned to protect literally when the building's on fire, which is something I never was trained to do. So I'm really proud of what she's accomplished in her career. And I think that she will continue to do great things. And I applaud Scout Motors for bringing her on board, for sure.
And I go back to, I had the discussion with Charity and just the passion she has for helping the community, helping the nation. I mean, you can sense that drive. Like, I'm here to help people. I care not about politics. I'm neutral to that. I'm here to do whatever it takes to help protect the citizens, whether it's, from the state of California or, at a national level. I was completely impressed with that and her knowledge of Star Wars. So.
That's critical. I think we should, people often ask us for good language and things for position descriptions. I think we should throw that in. And, you know, the Star Wars versus Star Trek, where do you align yourself there? You need to pick a side.
but you, Marisa, you spoke to Cheryl and Anna. I know, we all know both as individuals, but Cheryl in particular, that, we know Erin Avila from, who's in the corporate world now, and she started her career as a teller. So I love the fact that like Cheryl started like, hey, I'm starting at the most tactical level, and I've worked my way up to the organization to where I built the first GSOC. I'm solving problems at a large level, and I'm, shoulder to shoulder with other folks who have, a background or whatever. And I'm holding my own, in fact, maybe surging ahead.
Well, and I think she brought to that position of security such in-depth knowledge of what it means to work in and then run actual franchises for Chick-fil-A, and that she got to see, like, this is the kind of security we need from a supply chain standpoint, from a personnel support standpoint. So in a way, she could learn the specifics of what security means, but brought this incredible knowledge, institutional knowledge to that job and to really do something that is customized for Chick-fil-A. And Wendy
really shows a broad understanding of, like you said, the operation to include the supply chain. And if you want a seat at the table, you can speak, you can speak the language of the business. You're in the room.
Yeah. Wendy said something similar, which is, you can learn security, but what you should spend your time in college and maybe graduate school doing is learning how to do good analysis, learning how to write and communicate well, because those are going to be key characteristics that make you go from just being a security practitioner to an exceptional security practitioner.
which, you know, is almost like a great segue to Anna, who's, you know, we all know her on the call from XLOG. And of course, I think last year she was at a conference that I attended where she was talking about geopolitical blips and trends and really did an excellent job in, let's break down some very like complex geostrategic issues to folks in the room that were security leaders saying, so what to you and how you should be thinking about these things. So let's move on from women who protect and celebrating Women's History Month to some more recently. We saw that there was an Israeli airstrike in Damascus. I mean, as we record this, this is very recent times for us. I think it happened Monday. What was that? April 1st in the consulate in Damascus. There was reports of at least 7 people killed, including Iranian military officials. Of course, Iran vows response. We've seen this before. They're calling it a violation of international law, threat and retaliation. We know that the, you know, that particular state actor is very patient. So I'd ask Fred, like, what are the consequences and how should people be looking at this strike in context of maybe corporate America or other, say, defense-related interests?
Yeah, it was really an extraordinarily large escalation on the part of the IDF to target, you know, one could clearly see as not only an Iranian high-value target, but the surgical strike between a couple of diplomatic missions in Damascus to include the Canadian embassy, which was right next door to the Iranians. And, you know, look, the Israelis and other Middle Eastern services have a long history of being able to tactically function in Damascus. That is where General Soleimani was assassinated, if memory serves me right, of the Iranian IRGC. And one thing that always troubles me, Chuck and Marisa, you know, just as a student of Iran that, you know, I followed since 81 and certainly worked at the on the large-scale embassy bombings that affected us in the 80s, was that, you know, Iran has a tendency to be very patient. They have a global capability. If you map out and track, like, their response, they typically respond in kind. So if you had to put together a threat assessment right now, I would say or lean towards a degree of Iranian targeting of Israeli diplomatic officials, perhaps Israeli targets around the globe to include soft targets. They've operated in places that completely surprised us on my watch, such as the attacks on the Israeli embassy in BA, Argentina, and the Amia bombing in BA. We responded to both of those, and We never saw either one of them coming. I would like to think that we're a little better today at being able to pick up those threat signals, but they have a tendency to really define the element of surprise.
I got to imagine if you're in a think tank space or, again, like a quasi-governmental NGO type space, I mean, this is something that definitely catches your attention, especially if you're looking at who's the constituents. You know, if you think about travel safety or employee safety program for multinationals and then NGOs, even one click down, I mean, it creates a little bit of a different conversation, especially if you think about the thought leaders that you have within your organization and possibly what they're saying and then the response to this.
Yeah, for sure, Chuck. And, you know, also let's not lose sight of, you know, companies associated with the war effort in some capacity, whether that be, you know, our air quote industrial war machine, you know, the efforts underway, you know, in Gaza to support the IDF. And certainly Jewish CEOs, when you start thinking about that in context, is something that I would also be somewhat worried about if I was responsible for that executive protection. But look, you know, the thing about Iran is, you know, for the life of me, we've never been able to get in front of their threats. They tend to play chess while at times others play checkers. And one could certainly argue that the U.S. has done that as well. So time will tell. But I think that the IDF and Mossad elimination of all of these key Iranian officials, even going back to the assassination of Emad Mognia of Hezbollah, General Soleimani, and now the latest round, sooner or later, Iran will be forced to respond. And again, let's just hope we can get in front of it.
I think some actors are patient. You know, I think some threat actors are very patient and willing to wait. Willing to wait a very long time in order to extract whatever response or revenge that they might feel. I also wonder, in terms of things happening in the Red Sea, is there an additional effect on, do Houthis receive more missiles? Do they receive more funding, more resources? And does that escalate issues in the Red Sea, which then causes problems for, people in the shipping lanes, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, those traditional second and third orders effect, which I always tend to look at whenever I see something at this scale, like what will happen downstream of this?
Yeah. And, of course, you have to put it in context. People always say, well, why is this important to us? If I'm sitting in a corporation in America, well, to be blunt, the Iranians have shown a tendency to carry out acts inside the continental United States to include the targeting of dissidents. I worked a case in 1980, going back a long time now, where the Iranians assassinated a dissident in Bethesda, Maryland. We have the ongoing plots and threats against former Secretary of State Pompeo, and others that were associated with the assassination of General Soleimani. You look at the recent stabbing of the Iranian dissident and NGO official in London. So they have the capability to act out pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, and I wonder, like Marisa, you have a background in threat management and in, protective intelgence and things. I mean, how do you think about this from that point of view when you look at news like this? Like, how do you advise those folks? Like, at some level, Fred's actually absolutely right. People say, so what to us? I mean, how do you advise people add this to their, to their prior intelligence requirements or their monitoring?
Yeah, I was just going to tack on that the so what to us is this can be directly relevant no matter who's running an organization, no matter what the organization does, because we have C-suite leadership, CEOs, and others who oftentimes weigh in on, express opinions about geopolitical events. And my so what guidance in this is try to have that upfront conversation with your CSO, talking with the C-suite, the other, with CEO who may be saying something, tweeting something, truthing something, whatever they may do, be posting on social media, whether it's in a speech or off the cuff, because that can have direct implications, whether it's expressing concern for victims, expressing support for the IDF, whatever the case may be. Any expression, even if done in a private capacity, can bring threats into that organization, can put a target on that CEO's back. And I think it's really important to think through, to the extent you can, hey, this may... While you may be free to express an opinion, it can have ramifications for our security, for your individual protection, for your family's protection, for our organization. So there's always a temptation to express support, to weigh in. We've talked about this with, kind of the concerns about expressing support about any politically divisive issue or election, that it can have direct and unexpected consequences for an organization's security, not just executive protection. So try to have that upfront conversation, bring comms in for the CSO to talk with the CEO around. It's not that you can't make a statement, but let's think about what you do want to say and what the implications might be.
Probably an information operations component to this as well, which, information ops has a cyber and non-cyber pieces to it, which is, hey, don't forget, you can be, we were joking at the beginning of the podcast, like we could be AI, but, there could be social media or information attributed to an organization. So I think it's important to monitor these activities and also say, like, what's being said about us, what's being attributed to us, anything that could stir the pot, so to speak. I mean, it's a complex issue, one that really can't be summed up in 180 character tweet, if you will.
Yeah, especially too, since your global Fortune 1000s, have people scattered all over the world. It's also a good time to pull that threat assessment off and take a look at your locations of your personnel. Are you in proximity to an Israeli diplomatic mission, for example, or a consulate, and so forth? The Israelis have a number of consular agents stationed around the world too.
I mean, some of the biggest worries is it's not directed at me. I just happen to have gotten involved in somebody else's problem. It could be a protest, could be many things. I think that's a good piece of caution as well, like monitor the protest activities and other things that you could be in proximity to.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment, but first I wanted to tell you a little bit about Ontix Center for Connected Intelligence. In the world of safety, security, and protection, we know that gathering and sharing information is crucial. That is why we created the Ontix Center for Connected Intelligence. The center is a hub for the ongoing exchange of security strategies and best practices, insights on current and past trends, and sharing valuable information through expert discussion and analysis. It's made up of seasoned experts across a wide range of disciplines. To find blogs, podcasts, webinars, white papers, and more, check out the center by visiting ontic.co/center. That's ontic.co/center.
The other, I think recently on 60 Minutes, they had a report on Havana syndrome, which is, suggested it's a possible sonic or directed weapon energy attack. First reported, I think, back in 2016 by U.S. Embassy staff in Cuba. It's got some unexplained health problems. I mean, Marisa, any idea what those might be? I know you're not a medical doctor, but we'll pull on Doc Rondazzo.
Not a medical doctor, but I do play one on the podcast. No, but not a medical doctor, but I have heard about this, and we all have colleagues who've experienced some of these symptoms. What the 60 Minutes reporting is talking about is actually a really specific version of this, and they think is maybe the result of sort of energy weapons we're talking about. But there's dizziness, there's piercing headaches, eardrum problems. So many of the people they interviewed talked about it starting with feeling like intense pain as if someone had poked something through their eardrum, but also these long-lasting kind of balance issues, brain fog, nausea, sometimes vomiting, fatigue to the point of feeling drugged, real long-lasting cognitive difficulties. And it's interesting because the shift is now, we used to refer to this as Havana syndrome, it's now referred to as anomalous health incidents. But we're hearing more and more reporting that is, examples of this, occurrences of this, with this real consistency around what these people are experiencing. And the people who seem to be targeted or have become victims of this are either directly in positions of government authority or family members of those who are in positions of government authority. And so this is, we're starting to see real kind of gelling around consensus that this is a recognizable problem, but with unclear cause. And I want to shift to Fred's authority on this as to where this might be coming from, who might be doing this.
Well, yeah, Fred, there was a discussion that it was Russian-based. Of course, they deny it, and Cuba also denies any involvement in this. I mean, what are the implications around this? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think from a covert action perspective, certainly Russia, nor Cuba for that matter, would want to own up to this in many ways kinetic activity directed against U.S. Diplomatic personnel or federal agents. And, it's kind of interesting. My national security clearance lawyer was on 60 Minutes, Mark Zaid, and he represents a good number of the victims. And we had one of the victims on actually the ONTIC Protective Intelligence podcast, who spent many, many years with the CIA and was based in Moscow. And, the scary part from a directed energy kind of perspective that, let's be real, in all probability, every first-rate intelligence service in the world has some degree of capability in this space, no doubt. But the fact that nation-state adversaries such as Russia could be using it for specific targeting of our personnel is pretty frightening. And I know in just conversations with not only one of the victims of these attacks, you know, he raised a lot of concerns about, we really don't know the scope of the targeting. You know, back to, so why is this important to us, right? Well, let's face it, you know, our industry, our chief security officers and executive protection teams protect a lot of very high-profile CEOs that are in many ways much more prominent than a lot of government officials. And if you don't know the scope of this kind of targeting, which I don't think we fully do, I have no doubt that probably the CIA or state or the Bureau has a much more accurate assessment of exactly who's been targeted. It's pretty frightening. And, you know, look, we've all been practitioners in this space. Think in context of how would you even go about looking for it, right?
Well, I mean, you think about a lot of things you see that start and say, let's call it that air quotes here, the government space ends up in the corporate, in the private sector, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. And I think you're absolutely right. One, I have some former soldiers and former military compadres that have been afflicted and affected by this. And I think one thing that you hear a lot of people is like, let's just call it and start talking about it. Therefore, that we can get help. I mean, there's a whole health portion of this that I think everyone listening in and all of us certainly would champion, like whatever we can do to get help for these people. But the other thing, again, is like, you're absolutely right. We talked about proximity just a few minutes ago, you know, directed energy weapon, I mean, still has a proximity blast and a proximity effect that you may just be riding in the car with an individual, or you might be on the plane that receives it or nearby.
Or walking in an embassy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because again, we don't know the full scope and the breadth of the issue. As you say, somebody probably does, but they're not telling. But I think it's a good point. How do we even detect for it? I mean, certainly this, I think this idea of directed energy weapons, going back to the Star Trek, Star Wars from very early, Maurice, I mean, I think the effect or the idea of directed energy, whether it's sonic or some other type of energy is next on the list for, you know, asymmetric issues we now have to put on the board and start thinking about.
It's interesting too, because getting back to the so what aspect, I worked on a couple of cases, threat cases over the course of my careers that had Havana syndrome, anomalous health incident aspects mm-hmm. to it. And what was interesting was that initially the people who brought these concerns forward were trying to get help from the government official they were contacting, or directed to an HR professional within an organization saying, look, listen to me, believe me, I need help. And when they weren't believed, it escalated to a threat case. What's interesting is that one of them ended up looking to clearly have some sort of psychosis and has sort of was saying, well, but I'm also hearing voices and these things are waking me up at night. So it was not what we're hearing from this pattern. But the other two that I worked on were clearly in line with the pattern that the 60 Minutes reporting has just described so clearly. And so it was easy for these people to be dismissed when they first brought this forward. This is several years ago. Like, oh, these are crazy people. This isn't a concern. Got to a point of escalation where, no, now we're threatening. No one's listening to me. Therefore, I'm going to have to take dramatic, violent action to get someone to listen. So we have this other sort of so what aspect that you may have as a security practitioner, you know, a CSO, hear about these cases that at first blush may look like, oh, that's just that person's crazy, delusional, whatever we want to say, and dismiss them, but they can escalate and there may be a real health underpinning and an undetectable from a physical standpoint. We didn't see a weapon. This person's just now reporting something, from an intelligence standpoint, there's something to run to ground here that I think before, historically, years ago, even recently, we may have had a tendency to just dismiss these cases as this is something someone's making up.
No, you look at it in context. You know, you think about, you know, whether it be TDY or protection details, you know, back before the war started in Ukraine, for example, going in and out of Russia, and just the health ramifications of this. And in the course of discussions with our previous podcast with one of the victims, he said they were pretty sure that they had a mobile capacity with this kind of attack as well. So you could put it in a vehicle, a van or a truck, and kind of drive around with it. And then you start thinking in context of, you know, we all know from doing threat assessments, you know, trying to look at who your CEO is meeting with, you know, what threats are being dragged to that party or a vet and so forth. So, but again, you know, when you start thinking about this is, you know, from in the private sector, especially, how do you go about detecting it? I don't know the answer to that question. How do you know, you know, who they are targeting and why? I don't think we know an answer to that fully. Clearly, they're targeting intelligence professionals in all probability working on those intelligence accounts to some degree, but we really don't know the answer to that. So there's not a lot of transparency into exactly how this is occurring.
Well, you make a good point, Fred. I mean, for every very kinetic operations or operator on the field, there is a large amount of unsung quiet professionals in the background that are enabling an operation anywhere in the world. You know, we often just see on TV or in books, in fiction or nonfiction books, you read about the very end state. You kind of read about the buildup, but, you know, we kind of see the end state. And I think you bring up a good point. I mean, maybe many that are afflicted, and you know, I have some colleagues in the information operations world that have been afflicted by this, and it's these unsung quiet professionals in the background enabling and supporting those operations that, you know, likely could be victims. I mean, what would I'm obviously we have no crystal ball here at Ontic, but if we were considering what would next steps be investigating this, I mean, if they were to ask us, what would either of you say?
You know, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention does a great job at kind of this epidemiological research. They can go out and start to gather data on symptoms, on actual occurrences of things. The challenge is for so many of the people that we are afflicted, they may be operating within covert operations, within a national security function that doesn't allow for that disclosure. So I don't know how to get at those data, but I feel like there needs to be at least an effort to start to gather and determine what is the scope, prevalence, who's most impacted, how long has it been going on, what do symptoms look like, and what treatments or management options have helped.
Fred, are we any closer to them calling it, saying it is a thing that we're going to put on the board and now start to do research and start to try to figure out what the treatments are?
Yeah, I would think it's from I would look at it from a cold case perspective and go back in time to the first known reported incident of this, map out exactly where these incidents have occurred, put together a comprehensive timeline. I think also this is going to be a lot of S&T work, right? You're going to have the ability to detect and also the ability to look at it from a countermeasures perspective. I would want to believe that the State Department security engineering officers, and we had one of them on our podcast, a former one too, they have some countermeasures, hopefully, to be able to prevent this from occurring. And then, of course, let's be honest here. There's probably, you know, a degree of interest in how do we reverse engineer this to see exactly how it's emanating and so forth. You know, one of the things that I would be very interested in would be proximity, meaning, you know, is this in a
understanding that understanding the
right? Is it an observation post? You know, at the front gate of the U.S. embassy somewhere. And it's always there, pointed at the front gate, and they turn it on and on like a switch. Or do they just follow CIA case officers as best they can all throughout the city, or FBI agents working on a counterintelligence case? You know, again, you know, why is this important? Well, there's a high degree of evidence that these have taken place inside the continental United States too.
Yeah, I mean, I was glad to see the 60 Minutes piece, and I'm glad to see that we're having more conversations around it. I've noticed my own LinkedIn community being more active after the 60 Minutes piece came out and discussing it. Many in the intelligence community calling for let's call this, let's get after it, let's start formulating a plan. So clearly more to follow. And we'll report back, as I think this is something that's near and dear to all of us on this pod. Probably when you're listening to this, if you're listening to this, you survived the eclipse that's coming through a portion of the U.S., definitely Texas. I think it's going to be right over my house in Hill Country. But we are on, as we record this, we're on the cusp of up to a 4-minute blackout of an eclipse. And Maurice, I know you're up in the Beltway, so there's a different puzzle that you get to solve every day. But down here, I mean, Fred, we're getting all kinds of news about it's going to be crazy. There's going to be gas runs. There's going to be 4-hour waits. I don't know about you, but I'm getting ready just to hunker down for 3 or 4 days and eat sandwiches and read a book.
Well, Chuck, I'm always hunkered down. I'm always prepared. So bring it on. But I think you're right. On a serious note, I know there's a lot of local concern in the city of Austin. And let's face it, every high-tech company in America has operations here now. They're talking about maybe 1 million additional people coming into Austin just to participate in this.
The strain is going to be incredible.
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine. And, you know, the highways are already jammed non-eclipse days. So you add this to the misery. It's probably best if you do stay hunkered down.
Yeah. And it's always interesting. It makes me think about, you know, monitoring against natural, not just natural disasters, but, you know, all source monitoring, like, you know, weather hazards as well. I'm going to classify this as a weather or an atmospheric hazard. Because I mean, even down in the little town I live in Hill Country, I mean, many people, even the schools, are just saying, we're going to call it, we're going to close, we're going to prepare. I mean, it makes me think all the way back to like Y2K, for those that remember that, and in other incidents. I mean, Marisa, is this like alien, something you read in the National Enquirer for you guys?
Oh, this is fuel for every conspiracy theory forum out
it's
there.
Happening.
It is. I've seen things from, you know, yeah, 4 minutes is what the scientists are telling us, but the conspiracy theorists are telling us we're going to be, you know, things are going to go dark for 3 days at best. And then there's even the bizarre discussions around, an episode of The Simpsons predicted the eclipse and something really bad happening. I haven't watched the episode, but, you know, there are some eerie predictions from The Simpsons. So depending on what news or or sitcom you subscribe to, this could go a number of different ways. But just like with Y2K, good preparation is important for whatever may be coming, whether it's, the deluge of crowds that you all are going to get in the Austin area to, if something bad really does happen. It's always good to be prepared. So I love that Fred's got the all-purpose bunker. Right now it's going to be the eclipse bunker, and maybe there'll be a party in Fred's eclipse bunker. But
making
sure we're prepared. And then getting back to, with all seriousness, getting back to the so what aspect, why do we care? This is also the type of event that tends to bring people who love conspiracy theories and or may have some other issues going on to direct threats to different organizations who may not be taking this seriously, who they may think is part of a cause of this. So, yeah.
It's the full moon times 20.
It's
and
full moon
I
times
can only
20.
Imagine. Be interesting to keep an eye on our clients in the healthcare industry, because it will be interesting after the fact to kind of understand and see what types of threats and issues came forward, because you're absolutely right. These types of issues, I don't know why, but do tend to kind of bring up the best and the worst and the oddest of people for sure.
Yeah. Emergency department volumes are going to be really interesting to see after the fact.
Awesome. Well, this has been another edition, and it's been great. Maybe the next one might just be you on your own, Doc. So Fred and I might have been beamed up by then.
This will be the test of Fred's bunker. So
I think I will be just fine.
That's right. So Fred's wrap up
Fred, Marisa, as much as it's great for us to have conversations with everyone else, I mean, I find it quite enjoyable to sit with my colleagues and kind of distill some of the things that we're curious about. So I can't thank you both enough, and I look forward to the next one.
Yeah, same here.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by the Ontic Center for Connected Intelligence. Learn more at ontic.co/center. Again, that's ontic.co/center. It was produced by AJ McKeon. Please remember to rate and review our podcast on iTunes and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions, we'd love to hear them. You can reach us at podcasts@ontic.co or visit ontic.co/center for more information. Thanks for listening.